TV. TV. TV.
LKTV.
A podcast of the television.
How many times have we ever had guests on this?
On the TV one? Well,
not often.
And yeah, we had Rose came on twice to talk about Gilmore Girls.
Right.
Brian. Yeah. Brian Fuller, right. Very early on. Not a lot. And this is usually a show that is made available to our Patreon folks. So if you're catching this on the regular feed, he's Dave White. I'm Alonzo Beraldi.
Yeah. Because, I mean, if this is the first time you've ever heard Linoleum Knife, stop listening right now because this is not Linoleum Knife.
It's LKTV,
which
is
on the Linoleum Knife feed right now.
Yeah, this is usually a show that is exclusive to our Patreons.
It's
but
a television podcast
this was,
that we do.
We were super excited to have the people we have with us today, so of course we had to make it available to the world.
Should you introduce yourself if this is the first time anyone is listening to
I
Linoleum Knife?
I did that thing while
did
you
just
weren't
now?
Listening to me.
Oh,
yes.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a thing I do. So maybe our guests want to introduce themselves because I'm tickled pink, especially because we got a lot of great feedback from our previous LKTV episode where we talked about Christmas camp and everyone enjoyed how much Dave hated talking about Hallmark. So strap in, everybody. Guess who's here?
Oh.
Hey, it's the voice.
Deck the Hallmark podcast.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, out of town.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, my name's Bran.
Yeah, I'm Daniel Thompson.
I'm Daniel Pandolf.
Yeah.
A.K.A. Panda.
Panda.
That's right, because two Daniels is just two Daniels.
And I go by Dan, which I actually, like, coincidentally hate in real life.
Really?
Yeah,
oh,
yeah,
no.
Yeah. Dan in real life is a thing, but I...
That's why you're resting on the pancakes.
To rest your head on right now.
Yeah, as long as we got Pete Townsend playing. I've gone by Daniel my whole life, and these two guys used to work with me, and they would call me Dan to annoy me, like just for fun, because that's what we do. And then on the show, it just became this thing, and so it really...
Well, Grumpy Daniel doesn't have the same...
Sounds like somebody you want to hug. Grumpy Dan, on the other hand. And also, it's a persona... Like, don't get me wrong, the movies are terrible, but the Grumpy Dan persona does kind of lend itself to what we do. So I'm Daniel in real
life.
Let's
divide them up, shall we?
Yeah.
Well, for LKTV folks who don't know and have been missing out on, like, one of my very favorite podcasts, Deck the Hallmark is a show wherein these three gentlemen have basically usurped the work of women and gay men the way straight guys do. they watched all of the new Hallmark Christmas movies last year.
The appropriation was coming. It was just a matter of time.
Yes. And built an empire out of it. And the shtick here is that Bran here loves these movies. Panda likes them. Dan hates them. And so however you feel about a Hallmark movie, you will feel seen when you listen to this show.
That's exactly right.
Hold up. Because I've been waiting a long time for you three to show up into this house.
Oh, boy.
I have questions.
Okay.
You can call it an interrogation if you need to.
Sure.
I love it.
Number one,
yeah.
Bran.
Yeah.
What the hell's wrong with you?
A lot, but mainly
you are the person who loves these
love
movies,
them.
And I need like some explanation that makes sense.
Yeah. Well, okay. So it starts with my love for Christmas.
It does.
So I love Christmas. I love Christmas music. I love Christmas movies. And so when I found out about Hallmark Christmas movies, some like 5 or 6 years ago, maybe a little bit longer, I started watching. I was like, this does everything that I want it to do in my innermost being. And so it's stuck. And once Sling came out, and I was like, I can watch these, and I don't have to pay for cable. I can just keep getting free trials. I was like...
They haven't closed that loophole yet, have they?
They have not closed it. It's like there's a never-ending supply of email addresses out there. So I love them.
And I'm going to jump in. He undersold how much he loves Christmas. Mm-hmm. Literally at his wedding, he and his wife were exchanging vows.
Right.
And one of the vows is, I promise to always love how much we celebrate Christmas together. That was a wedding vow. Wow. That is what, this is not a shtick.
I admire that level of commitment.
If you look at, if you look at him, you're going to think it's shtick because he's kind of like a real life Muppet. But it, the reality is, it's not a shtick. Yeah. He loves him some Christmas.
I do. I have an online Christmas radio station.
He does.
I have put out this past year my 10th Christmas album. I love Christmas.
I almost understand you now.
I do want it to be known, because I can't pick at this wound enough. Bran saw It's a Wonderful Life for the first time last year.
Yeah.
Okay, so you prioritized hideous TV movies over the a legitimate American classic of cinema.
Okay, so just bear with me. Yeah. So Christmas...
It's not the first time he's done that, in all honesty.
Christmas is all about, you know, traditions and whatnot. And so growing up, for whatever reason, my parents failed at introducing me to that movie.
Okay.
And so when I grew up, moved out and whatnot, I kept going back to those movies that I watched growing up.
Right.
And I didn't really introduce many new ones. Except for the Hallmark Christmas movies. So once I found out Hallmark Christmas, it was game over.
And I'll actually buy that excuse, because like part of the reason that I wrote the book and my book about Christmas movies was because I had the sort of bubble that you grow up in.
Yeah.
And then one of the cool things about adulthood, especially if you are a Christmas obsessive, is that you start finding out that like the four albums your parents owned is not the limit of all Christmas music. Right. There's all this other stuff out there. Right. And there's a cinematic equivalent to that.
And if you think that is bad, and you also think we weren't going to talk about Bob Zemeckis, have I got some news for you. What Christmas movie do you watch every Christmas Eve?
Polar Express.
Boo.
It's terrible.
Nice. And come we have an
ongoing fight about how bad it is.
No, I know. Yeah.
This
totally
makes me want
here.
To kill myself. Right now. On the microphone.
I mean, okay, you already made the sweet tea. You're good.
I get it, because the Santa in the Polar Express is the most depressing Santa ever. But
Aerosmith Elves.
Yep. Rocking on top of the world. Come on.
All right, moving on.
All right.
Panda.
Panda. Explain yourself, please.
Yeah. I love friendship, and these guys can talk me into anything, and I don't have a strong backbone, so I say, sure, let's do it. Just because.
that I get.
Yeah.
And so pretty much that's how it started. They asked me to be on the show, and because I was getting ready to have a small child, and I figured my life was going to be effectively cut short from friendship outside my immediate world, I said, hey, let's do this. This sounds like a way to get out of the house. And I did do it, and now it's really transformed into something completely unexpected. And I really do. I like these movies. Like, they're fine for me. I can check out. I don't have to be, like, really engaged with them, and they work out just fine for me overall. And I don't have to have a strong opinion. They can sway me one way or the other, and I'm okay with that.
This is why I went to see Van Halen my senior year in high school. I allowed myself to be talked into.
Daniel.
Yes, sir.
Do you need rescuing? You can blink twice if this is the case.
So it is a it is.
Because you're the when I listen to y'all.
Yeah.
Like he's got it on in the car. He's got it on while he's doing dishes or whatever. And I hear y'all.
Mm-hmm.
And I hear your unhappiness.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's my boy right there.
Yeah, that's right.
Like he needs to lay in harder. Like despise more. Like I have a gift for you. In fact,
oh, I'd love
it's a
this
book that will serve you well.
The Pleasure of Hating by William Hazlitt.
William Hazlitt was a 19th century philosopher,
and
he wrote a very long essay called "The Pleasure of Hating."
Well,
and it's essential to live a thoughtful life.
Yeah,
and that's your gift from us.
Well, I appreciate it. I read A.O. Scott's Better Living Through Criticism, which I actually do. I don't read a lot of fiction, but I read film critics that I really do respect and admire. I tend to read if they wrote something. Like I just finished Owen Gleiberman's Movie Freak, which I thought was wonderful. And
Christmas movie guidebook.
Yeah, like if you no, that's not a memoir at all. But if Alonzo were to write one, I'd be all in. I'll get to the Christmas movie when I promise.
I have no rush.
There's something to be said, which was probably said not as artful as Hazlitt had to say it, about like not shying away from truthful, hateful criticism if it's desired and done right. The short answer, do I need help? I guess not. There's a few things about me that I think go into this particular endeavor that I never thought I would be a part of, especially as much as I am. I I definitely have a critical eye about just about everything. It just kind of is who I am and how I'm wired. But also, I will go to the movie theaters gladly for a bad movie.
Right.
So, like, there's something... I didn't get to go to the theater as much as a kid. It was a very special treat. I mean, maybe 3-4 times before I was a teenager. There's something about the movie theaters that's just a massage.
3-4 times total?
Total.
Wow.
Yeah, before I was a teenager. Okay. I remember seeing Aladdin in the theater. I remember seeing Beethoven.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Classic. I don't remember the other ones. Probably 2-3 more, maybe.
David Cronenberg's Crash?
Yeah, that was it. That's right. Well, we watched The Fly at home, and then we... So anyway, I kind of, you know, when I went to college, I've been in education for 15 years, but I wanted to take as much film as I could without learning how to make a movie. Mm-hmm. So for me, that was just any film crit class that was offered, whether it was just Film 101 or anything all the way through. And so I swung probably too far in the other direction and became kind of like a movie snob, so to speak, where I just was like... And in Columbia, South Carolina, that's really hard because you don't have any access to anything.
Right.
It's just
whatever.
Now we've got access. Yeah, Netflix will put it out. And even Regal, the movie chain, has started to put out some indies, which is wonderful. But and then I started to make my way back in my 20s. And now I feel like I'm somewhere in the middle. There are indies I really still want to see. I listened to that best of, whoever edited that best of your pod, Linoleum Life.
Oh, thanks. Did the evangelist. Oh,
yeah, that was the best way for me to try to dive in, and it was a lot of fun. And so, like, there are times when you're talking about movies and I really am like, man, I want to be in on that. I want to see it, and I would love that, but that just isn't a part of my, you know, my background now. And so... I love these two guys. I think what Panda said is incredibly true. Like, we left. These two guys left where I was working. They all went on to various things, and we used to have the best time together.
Right.
And we either had wives and young kids, or we had a kid on the way, and he and I lived 3 blocks from each other. We just didn't see each other that much.
Right.
And so I was like, yeah, I hate these movies, but I'll try to watch one. And then it turned into this thing where we got to hang out again. And then it turned into something more. The movies don't get any easier or better. They're really bad, and they're bad without excuse. Like, there's not a...
That is correct.
like excuse the mess. I didn't know you were coming over today. No, no, no.
No.
This
they
movie,
laid out that
you
way.
Knew
that's
exactly
right.
What you were doing.
We've been waiting on you. It sucks. Come on in. And so
let's make them something that's poison.
That's right.
And let's sit back and watch them eat it.
And so I think that there is a lot of fun. The hardest part is very much watching the films. It's tough sledding.
He makes me do it twice a year.
Oh yeah.
Well, 2 times each July that we cross over
with Bibbiani,
another,
right?
Yes. With Bibbiani.
Yeah.
And both times, as I sit there and watch, I'm taking my notes and whatever. I'm thinking, we're going to get divorced. Like, that's what's just going to happen. We're getting divorced. Like, I can't. It's now like 3 or 4 times, 3 or 4 years now that we've been doing this. And I'm thinking, I don't think I have another year in me of this. Because it actively makes me. See, I'm like you, Brant. We are, Alonzo and I love Christmas.
Yeah.
Like, I Christmas shop all year long. A little shelf in the closet in the hall. It's the closet of secrets. Like, there's little stocking stuffers in there.
Yeah. And he shops for, like, vintage ornaments all year long.
His stocking is like, yeah. We're going to have 3 trees this year.
Wow.
In this 1,000-square-foot apartment.
Wow. Yeah.
A real one, a big 6-foot aluminum one, and a little 3-foot aluminum one. We need more ornaments. And so, like, I got to buy more and more. I love Christmas.
Yeah.
These films make me not like it.
Yeah.
These films make me think, no, I hate Christmas now.
That's right.
Yeah. I hate you, who's ever in this movie, Candace, whatever the hell your name is, and I hate you, who, whatever your name is, I hate this movie, I hate Christmas.
That's right.
I turn into Dawn Davenport from, like, Female Trouble. I want to throw the tree down on my parents and stomp out.
There are very strict rules about, like, now I have to watch these movies.
Oh, yeah, we have rules
after he goes to
house.
Bed or is not in the apartment.
That's right.
You I know, cannot, it cannot,
and you somehow find a way to watch all of them.
That's a lot of late nights.
That is unbelievable.
I do it better early.
Have you always watched all of them, or was it the checklist last year?
The checklist, I think, really got me. I think I might have done it the year before. I can't remember. But between the checklist and y'all's show, I was like, well, now I'm in this. I figured at some point, like, I was hoping you were going to have me on for your review show, which you did. And so I was like, I got to be ready for this.
Well, the first one I watched, we did last summer, was Rocky Mountain Christmas. and I had to take breaks and not like we did this Q&A in New York. I told this story, but not like I got to take 10 minutes. Like I'm watching it on my phone. And after 25, I said, nope.
Which
nope.
one is Rocky Mountain Christmas?
Chris Pilar.
You haven't seen it.
Lady Booth.
It actually turns out to be a better one of the movies.
Gregory Harrison owns a ranch and which a movie is the star. With Dolly comes Parton.
That one hasn't out yet.
That's a Smoky
Mountain.
That's
like the different 80s,
one.
Though.
No,
I'm yeah, not. Yeah, no, no, no.
This is Rocky
Mountain. That's hilarious.
She's got like two or three this year alone.
That late 80s one that she did with like Lee Majors or someone.
Yes.
Whoever else was in it. It's hilarious.
Dolly is going to be in one this year.
The thing that Rocky Mountain Christmas has going for it is that, and Palaha told this story on y'all's show, they shot, like, everybody got hired after Thanksgiving, and the movie aired right before Christmas, so you can see their breath.
Yeah.
Like, they actually shot it in the winter. It's not July in Vancouver.
Yeah. It's raining during the parade at the end.
It was
end.
Their lines written
less,
on their hands.
Less, fewer than 20 days from first shot filmed to airing.
And that's what I think gives a movie such cohesion.
That movie I watched in 3 days. 25, 30 minutes a day.
Wow.
3 days.
No, Dave is so fried on these that, like, just hearing a generic version of Jingle Bells, he's like, oh, God, no.
I go to bed like 9:30. Like I said, I'm early to bed.
Also a former school teacher.
And as I'm falling asleep, as I'm drifting off, if I hear some Casio playing Good King Wenceslas or whatever, I know they're out. I know whoever's on screen is waltzing to it, and I'm hearing it, and I'll pull my phone up, and I'll text him. We're 20 feet apart, but I'll text him like, make it stop. And then I hear the volume.
And I was watching Nosferatu on AMC, which has a Christmas thing to it. And their theme song is this like creepy minor key version of Carol of the Bells. And he's like, I can hear that. Turn it down. I'm like, it's not a horror movie. It's something else entirely.
Prestige television.
So yeah, there are rules in this house.
That's funny.
That's great.
I love my sanity needs to be preserved.
No,
that's,
absolutely.
That's important.
I don't want to kill Christmas for you. That would be
like
very
actual Christmas.
Yeah.
Whatever this is on the TV is not does not resemble any Christmas that I ever want to be a part of.
Wow. Wrong. You're wrong. It's every Christmas.
Brandon, mind you, picked Christmas Campus's favorite of the year so far. Now, is it because it's the only
so far,
it's the only
right?
new one?
It's
his
favorite
why?
Hallmark movie of the year of any kind that we've watched.
Yeah.
Wow. Crazy. Okay, one more thing, and then I'm going to stop talking about Christmas. Of the three of you, who wraps a big ribbon around their tree to decorate it?
I've never done that.
Okay, you don't do it? You don't do it?
No.
You don't do it?
I might do it. The ribbon, like, to put the ribbon, like, the just...
I don't know what's going on right
you
now.
You know what? I have... Not yeah, every I use year. Ribbon. Occasionally, I'll wrap a little burlap.
Okay, all right. Because every one of these movies, the people, first thing they do is they dig out their box of Balsam Hill ornaments. That
correct.
And they're like, look at Grandma's heirlooms, and I'm like, liars. And then they put like two of them on, and like, oh, that was such a beautiful moment of decorating the tree. And the next thing you see, there's a big giant ribbon wrapped around the tree,
right?
Because some set decorator was like, eh. I gotta go to lunch, and then they're like,
"That's right."
Zoom that thing. They wrap it around. And
it's
no
so
one,
funny. It's
no
so
one
funny,
should
though.
Do this.
Ribbon adds a lot to a tree. Can I, in defense of ribbons?
Little ribbons on a branch, sure, but the one big fat one going around, even if that ever looks good, Hallmark has ruined it forever.
I'm willing to allow an artfully placed tree length ribbon as long as it is coherent with the rest of the tree. Sure. Not just like someone just said, whatever.
It'll cover up space.
Yeah, it'll cover up space.
Are you color lights or white lights kind of guy?
Oh, color.
Old-fashioned C7 ceramic, big, multicolored. That's what I had when when I was a small child.
Ditto.
1,000 years ago. Yeah. That's what we had.
Yep.
And that's what we have now.
I love it.
They're hard to get.
You can't
get
find
them
those colors anymore. Now they're purple?
The internet.
No.
We have to buy them on the string. Yeah. Like, you can't just buy the bulbs.
They have the LED ones, but they just give off a different hue. Mm-hmm. Than, like, it's not Christmas.
Yeah,
same.
It's cheating.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But fair. You go back like 4 years ago with the Hallmark movies, and it used to be if you had a fake tree, you were the bad guy.
Yes. Mm-hmm. You were a monster.
But then once Balsam Hill.
Now they're hauling in Balsam Hill fake trees. Yeah.
But there's still always a tree shopping scene no matter what. Yeah. Because that's like one of the. You gotta.
And they always choose a crappy tree. Just terrible trees. I don't understand it.
Okay.
All right. Now, you guys are significantly younger than us.
No.
So we're going to interrogate you about television practice.
Mm, love that.
Nice.
Well, how significantly younger? You're 53. I'm 55.
I'm 52.
Y'all are in your 30s, right? All of you.
No, he's not.
I'm 27.
27.
You're a millennial.
Yeah. He's okay. Half you guys' age.
All right.
Well, technically, we're all millennials by the...
Technically,
yes,
but I'm in that zennial gap. I'm the oldest by 5 years, so yeah, I'm 35. I'll be 36 next week,
right?
And then,
yeah, I'm 30. I'm 31. Yeah.
31. How do you not know how old you are?
It's the Tide Pods I was eating. Sorry,
it's the time change.
Yeah,
California.
3 hours, man.
The lag of the whole year.
That's right. Minus 3 hours.
Pacific time.
Yeah.
So, like, Dave and I grew up with no cable. No VCR.
Right.
The 1970s. Yeah, in the 70s, basically. Yeah. So we were fed a steady stream of reruns because that's what there was.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of our childhood TV is the TV that was old even then.
Yeah.
And then I think once cable started happening, VCR started happening, there was more daily programming aimed at kids. Like, we had Saturday morning, but then there was Nickelodeon, then there was, like, Disney Channel and all that stuff. So, like, what did you guys grow up on, and what do you look back now? Like, are you guys that target demo that Hallmark is clearly going after with their nostalgia casting in terms of your Winnie Coopers and your, you know, your Lacey Chaberts and whatnot?
Yeah.
Oh, is that what that is? Is that what's happening there?
I think that, maybe a little bit older than us, but I think that's definitely a big part of what they do nostalgia wise.
Yeah.
See Winnie Cooper in a movie.
You're Lori Loughlin. Oh,
that's right. Oh, no.
So for me, I would say growing up, as far as like the cartoons were a big deal.
Two weeks ago.
ABC had the cartoons on Saturday morning. Recess was a cartoon that I loved.
Okay.
And then a lot of my TV, though, I'm the youngest of five, so it was dependent on what my brothers were into and whatnot.
Right.
So I was really into the tail end of Boy Meets World, and so once they came out on DVD, I wanted them because I hadn't seen the whole series because it was slightly before my time.
Right.
And it is still to my this day, I think, my favorite TV show. I think it's great. I love it. And I love
Topanga First Crush?
Oh my gosh. Yeah, Topanga sure. Lawrence.
Yeah.
Bring it.
And then it occurred to me, I went back and I watched The Wonder Years, and I love that. And I think it's something about the Savage voice that just they work for me. And so, but I would say Boy Meets World was probably my favorite show.
Formative television, all right.
Yeah. So growing up, I grew up in both a socioeconomically poor family, and so we didn't have cable. We actually only had TV that picked up about three stations, and one of them was a station in Chicago that played old, like, 1950s, 60s shows.
WGN?
Yeah.
Dobie Gillis.
Yeah, so I grew up with
Dobie!
That. Yeah, and it was great. I loved it. I mean, that was what I grew up on, because we didn't have, and then I also grew
and
up
now
up
you are Maynard G. Krebs.
I am. Right. I literally am that guy. Social awkwardness and everything. They worked perfectly. And I also grew up in a really conservative family, so I wasn't allowed to watch a lot of, like, even Boy Meets World. Anything, if the TV was on in the evening, that never would happen in our family, because they just said anything past 5 p.m. is not something you need to be watching. And so I didn't grow up with a lot of television. It wasn't until I was a teenager, really, that we got cable television. I watched, you know, Nickelodeon, Disney for a little bit, but I was deprived largely, and I think it shows. I have no taste now. my wife watches the CW channel, and I'll That's watch brutal. It with her. That's all she watches.
Riverdale's great.
Oh my god!
The first season. And then kind of goes.
I can't believe we're doing this right now.
Did you watch the newest season?
No, somewhere two thirds in season two, I was like, we're done.
The storyline in season three is insane.
Yeah. I don't doubt
there
it.
Is
but
a monster.
Time out in three.
There's
season
a bad
three.
Guy.
It's insane.
There's a bad guy who's the gosh. What is he? The something king.
Jughead's brother's nephew.
No, don't be. And he's
how dare
basically
you?
He's got a mask on. He's just a giant tree. And he's been feeding kids poison.
A tree.
That's cool.
Okay, as you do.
That's gripping.
Now, were there shows that you were forbidden that you then later were like, I can't wait until I'm on my own and I can finally see this.
Jerry Springer.
I think. It was on before five.
Yeah, he was. It really, I don't know why my mom thought that was kind of
the magic cutoff point.
5 p.m.
After that is the devil's hour. When I got older, I was allowed to watch that, and then. I'm trying to think if there were any other shows that now, like, going back that I've gone and seen. A lot of it had to do more with movies that I've gone back and watched. Yeah, I wasn't allowed to do, like, the Harry Potter and stuff like that.
So I was on my own when Harry Potter came out. That was such a huge deal. I just knew I wasn't going to be allowed to watch if I was. I grew up in a home that was, politically not conservative, but protective, yes.
Yeah.
Down the South. We did not have cable, didn't have a lot of money, and like if a beer commercial was on TV and people were having fun drinking beer, my parents changed the channel.
Whoa.
It was didn't see any movies, didn't see anything, but the After Five thing we didn't have. TGIF was a big deal for me.
Right.
We didn't get to watch anything like that week to week religiously, but Family Matters, Full House, Boy Meets World, Hanging with Mr. Cooper, Step by Step.
Right.
Like those, and then Saved by the Bell on Saturday mornings, I think were all really like what I was allowed to watch.
Is the Saved by the Bell restaurant still open here?
The Max?
I think it might be.
Have you been to it yet?
No.
It's called like Saved by the Max or something. It's not far from us.
That's happening.
To be a pop-up thing, and then I think it just stuck around.
Okay.
We've never always full, and you have to have like reservations and stuff.
We are generations removed from that one. Like the Peach Pit was already too much, young for us.
I will say when I got a little bit older, and then revelatory comedy from Arrested Development's probably my favorite. Mm. I know that's a fairly common answer, but. I was like in college when Arrested Development started, and I just couldn't believe how smart and funny and witty it was. Right. And I just every week I would just hang on for Sunday nights for Arrested Development, and it just was. And before that, I liked Scrubs and some of these shows that replaced that way. Like I remember watching Seinfeld. I watched the finale with my dad. So like we loved those shows, but I was a little bit younger for Seinfeld and Friends. But when those new Thursday nights came in, and Scrubs was a big deal for me, and then Arrested Development, when I was in college, I think was huge. And then I missed The Sopranos when it originally came on, but I remember watching a show called Rescue Me, which is like a super phenomenal show or anything, but it's about the firefighters after 9/11 and starting Dennis Leary. And I just remember thinking, this is the first show I've watched. That's an hour-long drama that doesn't necessarily have a place to be. It's just sitting with these characters, and I was like, this is revelatory. And then I saw an interview with Dennis Leary where he said, well, we've got The Sopranos to thank for that. So I went back and watched, like, got the DVDs from Blockbuster and watched all The Sopranos and was just blown away.
Well, now, Dan, now that you've been talking about shows like I Might Miss, when I finally was able to watch whatever I wanted on television, Nip Tuck was my very first pick of choice.
Oh, yeah.
Which
never been
thing.
A Ryan Murphy guy.
Well, it wasn't good television, but, I mean, it was...
A lot of butts and showers.
Yeah. Didn't know what else to do.
So anyway, just to put a bow on, not a tree, but on my TV opinion, is I felt this really weird, unfair entitlement to the golden age of TV. Like, as a 35-year-old, I feel like Mad Men, Breaking Bad, Wire, these shows I just feel like were my shows.
Yeah, sure.
Like, I feel like those shows were just, like, Mad Men was just, it was so good. And so for me, I just felt like completely not fair at all that this was just... my generation's shows.
Mm.
And I just felt so proud of that for some reason because it was like very cinematic quality, on TV, which was just really cool for me. And so that did not happen for me as a child, but in my 20s, that was a big deal to be on top of watching all of that.
True. Timing wise, I'd say you're better off with you know, what HBO was doing in the, you know, turn of the millennium. That's than right. Like, you know, Tales from the Crypt. And
that's right.
What's the
Taxi Cab Confessions?
What was the Brian Benben sitcom with the
Dream On? Yeah, Dream On. They were doing it all the time on that show.
I firmly believe that there's a solid 10-year period where there were shows that got canceled by networks that would be absolute gold right now.
Oh yeah.
Like, you had Brian Fuller on, like the Brian, like Hannibal and Pushing Daisies. Yeah, yeah. Like Pushing Daisies and Hannibal are two.
They're amazing.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Pushing Daisies, I think, got screwed by there was a writer strike when the second season happened.
There was, don't you remember?
There was. No, I know.
To the Warner lot.
Yes,
and
I remember.
He was standing on the corner and he was like, "I gotta go on the set right now." I'm like, "Oh, weird."
Because
like,
he could go on the set as a producer, but not as a writer. It was this weird thing where he could.
That's crazy.
I could talk about this, but I couldn't talk about that. It was nuts. Huh. But yeah, that messed that show's momentum up because it was off for like 6 months and then it came back.
Yeah.
And I'm curious about like the whole. I love the nothing after five. That's an amazing like line in the sand, because like Dave grew up eventually evangelical, but not like it wasn't coming down from his parents. He had an older brother who got super into it, and so like any kind of limitation on media was sort
did not exist in my home.
It was self imposed. I was going to say
it was self imposed much later though, after my adolescence,
right?
Like at the end of tail end of my adolescence, like but as a small child. My house was chaos, and there were no rules.
Yeah.
And so I got to see anything I wanted anytime.
You were watching soap, and no one cared.
I was watching soap,
Good gracious.
Soap that was, God, when soap came on, that was like, it was from the pulpit telling parents how to let kids watch it. So, all did.
My parents got divorced, and my dad was taking us to R-rated movies, and I was 11.
I can remember when NYPD Blue came out.
Oh, yeah.
There was a petition at my church that they wanted everyone to sign to keep ABC from airing Dennis Franz in NYPD Blue.
There were cities in the South that wouldn't air that show at all. Remember.
I got my mom. I can do one better. My mom, when this is your, you better go ahead and take a sip, Dave. You don't want to spit take everywhere. They got a great setup here. So when The Simpsons was out for years, but Burger King was the first to put Simpson toys in their kids' meals.
Right.
Mm.
Because The Simpsons was always Bart's this wisecracking, smart talking.
Eat my shorts.
Yeah, that's right. Disrespects his parents. My mom got very upset about that. Didn't care that The Simpsons was on TV, but that there was going to be a toy of a kid talking back to their parents. Mm-hmm. And she wrote a letter to Burger King.
Yes.
Wrote an actual letter.
Dear Burger.
That's right.
Dear Mr. King.
I have some thoughts.
Your
Lots
Highness.
Lots of respect for your burgers, not so much for your ethics.
That's right. And they sent her a bunch of coupons and stuff back in the mail, like hell would free
that's
food.
That's all it takes to get the coupons?
Yeah. I think all
a
of
bunch
us,
of free kid meals.
I can be bought off with onion rings.
That's right. And then I all three of us grew up evangelical Christians. We all taught in evangelical school. I have seen kids who have been completely sheltered just go off the absolute deep end.
Oh, yeah.
And that's just part of the downfall of what the political machine of evangelicalism has become.
Rumspringa.
So terrible and unfortunate.
Rumspringa that never ends.
But the I think what's interesting about it is that my dad and mom, like, we were conservative. My dad's a pastor. We were very conservative. But, like, never for political reasons. Like, my dad, we went to the Southern Baptist Convention. And my dad and mom were there when they said they were boycotting Disney because of the Pride Week. And my dad came home and he said, "Son, that's dumb. And literally that's why we went to see Aladdin.
Wow.
Was because he was that, he felt that.
I'll show you.
He felt that strongly.
Take that.
He felt that strongly. And still to this day, my dad, who's almost 70 and still pastors, if you went to his church, you would never feel for a second like there was any sort of agenda or indoctrination. So that's the home I grew up in.
Right.
And so my parents never had this, if it has this word, you can't. It was just always more of a feeling of what their kids should and shouldn't watch. And I remember kind of parceling that apart, going, so this movie had an F word in it, and it's bad, but this movie didn't, but it has this in it, and I can see it. And my dad, like, as we got older, he just basically handed more of it to us.
Yeah.
Hmm. And basically, by the time we were seniors in high school, he just said, hey, whatever, if you think you're getting value out of what you're watching, like, if you think that that is something that's valuable, right?
Right.
And you've gained something out of your cultural experience, then go do it.
Hmm.
And so that was a very like for South Carolina Southern Baptist Evangelical, that was a very measured, normal take that I think most of my friends did not have. They either had the watch whatever you want whenever you want,
right,
mostly from divorce homes, where dad was trying to make up for mom and going, I'm going to let you see this or that.
You can do whatever you want.
And or they had the other, which was, we can't see anything ever if it's got this rating.
Don't watch TV
bad.
After 5.
That's right. For instance. And so,
you guys wound up watching Passion Cove on Cinemax as a family. Eventually.
If my mom or dad was listening to this, they would be so upset. No, my mom's still at the TV at my parents' house to this day.
Yeah.
There is a placard underneath the TV
right.
that says, I will set no worthless things in front of my eyes, right, which is a Bible verse. That is still at my parents' house.
Yeah.
And my mom listens to every podcast that we put out. She loves Hallmark movies. and so it's this weird thing. But my dad would be the guy that always took me to the movies. My mom didn't care about the movies. My dad would, I remember, everybody hates The Lost World, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Mm. I love The Lost World because I remember standing in line with my father
to
go see The Lost World. And I just thought it was the best thing I'd ever seen. The glasses cracking and Jeff Goldblum's. I thought it was just phenomenal.
Yeah, right.
I don't think that was a normal conservative evangelical experience.
Right.
Is what I'm trying to say is that
right.
for so much that I was steeped in that world, we weren't really culture warriors. We didn't line up and go, Falwell said it, we're going to do it.
Continuum is so wide
and so long
that. What I find recently in the past few years as things have gotten faster and crazier is people in the evangelical world drawing lines in the sand with each other.
Yeah.
and being like, okay, well, these lunatics over here are not real Christians. Yeah. And it's kind of like what's happening. This is a TV podcast, after all. It's kind of like what's happening on The Bachelorette this season, which we talk about a lot on this particular podcast.
Good for
podcast.
You guys.
The division of labor is that he tends to watch the prestige stuff, and I tend to watch the trashy reality shows.
Yeah,
because they're fascinating.
But the movies, it's reversed then.
The movies are a little different because it's just that his taste in film. If you listen to Linoleum Knife, proper Linoleum Knife, Alonzo's taste in film, you correct me if I'm wrong, you like a more traditional narrative.
I hew toward the mainstream. I have an understanding of art cinema, and I like it, and there's a lot of it that I think is great, but I'm not going to run out for the one-night engagement of a Korean melodrama the way you will, I admire that, and I'm glad that you're bringing that to the show, because, I'm not always. I can't always get ginned up.
The capital A art house is my jam.
Yeah,
yeah.
And because of that, I think I kind of devote my brain to that.
Mm.
So when I'm here watching TV for this particular podcast, I'm on MTV2 watching Are You the One? I need those kids in the truth booth now so they can find out if they're a perfect match.
Truth booth. Yesterday. Let's go.
But getting back to what you were saying and how it relates to this season on The Bachelorette, the villain of the season. The villain of the season.
I've been watching the clips.
This guy named Luke from Gainesville, Georgia, and he is.
I've been to Gainesville, Georgia.
He is a
nothing but villain.
Buzz, your girlfriend. Woof.
He is an evangelical Christian, and he has made it clear every step of the way that not only is he an evangelical Christian, but he's also an a-hole.
He has weaponized his moral high ground. Disgusting.
To the point where when he's finally ejected from the show after being a nonstop stew of evil from start to finish, he won't leave, and he says to Hannah, the Bachelorette, you owe me the opportunity for me to say one more thing to you, and she says, no, I don't, and then he says, can I pray over you?
Oh, boy.
And I thought, oh, dude, oh, no, 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 no.
Don't do that.
No, you're not supposed to do that. Don't say things like that. Then they have the Men Tell All last week episode, and he came on, and he said it out loud. He said, yes, sure, I want an independent woman, because one of the men, one of the discarded contestants, Mike, who's going to be the next Bachelor.
Okay.
Because he's the best of this season.
Come on, of course.
Yeah.
We all love Mike.
Big Mike. He's going to be the Bachelor. He's going to be the Bachelor next season. Yeah. There's no doubt in my mind. Because they've never had a black Bachelor. And now they have had a black Bachelorette, so now it's time for a black Bachelor.
Yeah. And then they announced so same-sex Bachelor.
Yeah, let's all hold our breath for that.
They did. They
Bachelor
announced
in Paradise is fixing to come on next week, and Demi goes to Bachelor in Paradise.
With her girlfriend?
Winds up with a girlfriend.
Oh, well, all right. Yeah. Okay.
So the...
And in a Hallmark movie, if you squint just right, the other couple at the table might be a couple.
What's going on at the table.
Dude, it's December Bride. I know we're off, but Jessica Lowndes' brother, he's gay, right?
I was thinking that, but my go-to is always the dog shelter guy in Road to Christmas. Yeah, yeah, come on.
They are definitely gay.
Yeah.
Well, in Christmas Camp, the guy who's... always in the office decorating the office.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Dan, whatever his name is.
Come on.
I went so quickly after Road to Christmas to the Facebook groups just to see
they run a shelter together.
Together.
Yeah, like and they like a tight t-shirt.
Yeah.
I'm just going to say.
Yeah.
Who doesn't?
Yeah, come on.
But so on, Luke is sitting in the Mentel All episode, and Mike says to Luke, you don't want a woman that you can love. You want a woman that you can control who will obey you.
Buckle up.
And he says, no, I do want an independent woman, but I also believe that it's the husband's job to lead and guide the wife. And I thought, oh, dude, I know what you're saying.
Yeah.
And I know where you can go find that girl.
Yeah.
Back in Gainesville.
Yeah. Yep,
not true. Here in Los Angeles on an ABC TV dating game show. Yeah. That is not where you're going to find.
What did he think?
Well, if he doesn't know, that's going to go horribly.
Here's what I think happens. I think a guy like that is, on base level, pretty dumb. Because he's very good looking.
Yep.
And he hasn't had to do anything except be very good looking.
His whole backstory is, I used to bang a lot of chicks, but now I have the Lord in my life, so I'm saving it for marriage, and you better too.
Right. Mm.
Seriously doubt he's rich, though, right?
I think a guy like that auditions for the show, and I think his church is super into it. Because here's what the show does, very cynically, each season. They cater to an evangelical audience by having contestants who will very, very easily talk about their faith to right about level 5.
Sure.
If you're above level 5, you're going to get real, hardcore. They don't really want you on the show.
Yeah.
Right.
They want you Hannah level. Hannah level is... I'm a good Christian and Jesus loves me. Oh, is that a windmill? Let's go have sex in it. Yeah. Like she's going to go have sex in the windmill. She has sex in the windmill this season.
Spoiler.
Twice. Yeah. And so
twice.
With different people.
That's right.
Wow.
The same guy.
Mm. Oh, same guy. Oh, sorry.
Twice.
Oh, sorry, sorry.
No, no. Okay. She as she's telling Luke to go away, because he's furious that she had sex.
She pulls a Sam Phillips.
She's like, oh yeah, I did it. I did it in the windmill. And then I did it again in the windmill with the same guy. Ha ha, how you like them apples?
That's right.
And then he's gone.
Now my mom at this point would say that she would set no worthless thing before I.
But so he's got this thing, right? He's crossed line 5. Like he's up in the nether regions.
That's right.
Where he's getting all kinds of support on Twitter and Facebook, because I looked it up, from folks who are like, well, you just need to find a godly woman.
Oh, right. But ABC's happy to have the caricature.
And ABC's happy to have this, wildness take place. They've never allowed that kind of thing to go down before.
This guy has a sociopathy, though, that has nothing to do with his religion.
He's still a complete a-hole. Like, that's not in question.
Mm.
But his faith is going to not be questioned at all. And the way he practices his faith is not going to be questioned at all in Gainesville, Georgia, at his congregation, because you go there during his hometown and they do a prayer huddle over him. And I was like, oh, I remember those. Those are not good news. Because what's happening is in this season is this guy comes to Los Angeles perhaps for the first time in his life and realizes that there are other people in the world. Period. there are other people in the world, and they don't share your ideas, and they don't share your faith. And if they do share your faith, they express it differently. They have different decisions about what is okay for them to do and what is not okay for them to do. And his ideas are, well, I'm going back to Gainesville, where the real Christians are. Yeah. And what they what a guy like that doesn't get, and what the show also doesn't get, is that they're all real Christians. Like the hardcore loonies and the white supremacists and the Trump the Trumpistas, all of them over here, they're real Christians, and so are the people on the far left who are, you know, starting the sanctuary movement in the 1980s that now continues today.
Right. The ones who are going to jail for bringing water to people in the desert.
Yeah, the people who are going to jail for bringing water to people in the desert. So you've got this whole continuum, and they're all drawing lines in the sand against each other, and it's all playing out on The Bachelorette, which is wacky.
I think there's a lot there that just speaks to just, like, why I'm passionate about who I am and what I do. Yeah. I think what's interesting is that historically, and my background is in history, is like that's been the case about Christianity, and it comes in waves. But right. Historically, you have this where in the 1970s, basically, you know, Falwell and Graham not as much, but Falwell would just say, hey, if you have, it's not enough, say you're a Christian, you have to vote right. this way, act uh-huh. this way, look this way, interpret this way.
Right.
And I think this guy is a philosophical, hermeneutic, intellectual guy who will tell you that his interpretation of the Bible may not be the correct one because he knows better than to say that. Right.
Thank you for saying that about me.
Yeah. Okay. Nice.
People are wondering who you're pointing to.
Yeah. I went to a Christian school my whole life, and I think one of the things that, like, I went through a lot just in general with my faith, because when I went to a Christian school to graduate, we had to write a philosophy paper. And it was a paper we had to write about our philosophy of life, good, evil, right. God, all this stuff, which is great. I think it's wonderful for a senior high school to have to write a philosophy paper. But they handed me a list of sources I was required to use. So it was not, it was indoctrination. It wasn't, hey, can you stand on your own 2 feet? It was, use these, read these books, regurgitate that. And so I left very jaded, very much like, this is the worst possible thing. And then looking at, and this is a TV podcast, not a religious podcast, but looking at the example of Jesus and how he was
faithful. It's always kind of a religious podcast because of my background.
Well, you know, and for me, like, I was very jaded when I left left my home and went to college. And then I think for a while it was tough to reconcile what I'd been taught, not for my parents. My parents were really a great example of love and all that good stuff. But through my education with my love of the heartbeat of culture, and it was tough to reconcile those things until I actually looked at the example of Jesus instead of the interpretation of Jesus. And so that was really a big deal for me. Like that changed my outlook on what I'm watching and how I'm interacting.
Was there Christian media that you guys were being given instead of primetime TV? Like, was VeggieTales, are y'all too young for that?
So I did VeggieTales.
You're definitely not too young for VeggieTales, right?
I watched it this morning. I love it.
We had VeggieTales, David and Goliath.
I was a bit too old, but I remember, like, for us, there was something, this is terrible, you should go look it up if you haven't, called McGee and Me.
Great. Oh, I know all about it.
Yeah. So my brother...
It's
y'all, tell me more, I don't know this one.
It's unwatchable.
It's insanity. It is,
you have to check it out.
It's a blast. I still live my principles by McGee and Me.
My brother and I my brother's 2 years older than me, and he's a pastor, and we have so many inside jokes from McGee and Me that we still use with each other that no one in this world. And then I was in, like, all the three of us, we went on a road trip to Raleigh, North Carolina to do a show, and we all just played 90s and 80s Christian music because that was what we were steeped in. Mm. Like, that was kind of our wheelhouse.
Okay, wait, go back. I need to know what McGee and Me is because I have no idea.
So there is a guy named Nick, and he's a kid that lives, I believe, in San Francisco. I could be wrong about that. There are hills, but a lot of houses. And his parents and he live a normal life. He's got friends. One of them's black, of course. And
only one.
Yeah, that's right. And
exactly one.
The thing about Nick is he's a talented artist. He's a burgeoning MacGyver, so to speak. He has these gadgets around his room that, like, open the door for him and do everything. But here's where it gets crazy is that Nick has a cartoon friend named McGee, and who's almost like he sits on his shoulder and goes around with him and talks.
It's his moral
compass. It's moral compass.
It's Jiminy Cricket.
It talks to him in these situations where, you know, like, for instance, he wants to go see a movie with his black friend that his parents have not approved of. And the movie, I still remember it. It's called Night of the Blood Freaks, Part 4. And he... McGee is...
Well, part four is where they really started to go over the edge.
You know and that's when they crossed.
You know how the whole plot falls apart.
You know, Police Academy 5, there's no Bobcat Goldthwait. Well, imagine. So anyway, he set, against McGee's better wishes, he sets up this entire contraption to make it look like he's sleeping. And he has even a recorder kind of like this one.
Oh, Ferris Bueller.
So like, he Ferris Bueller's it. And then he goes to see this movie and he's terrified, of course, and he learns this valuable lesson. Like, it is that kind of show, and it's that's right. You've got it. You've got to check it out as much as you possibly can.
I actually had the board game of McGee and
you did.
And also Larry Burkett's Money Matters.
Oh my gosh,
we had Christian board games.
Yeah.
Instead of Monopoly, it was Bibleopoly.
Bibleopoly. Yeah, I remember that one.
We had Left Behind, the game that somebody gave us, but we couldn't get.
Oh my gosh, the Rapture was such a big deal growing up.
Any minute now.
Come to find out, the Rapture's not mentioned in the Bible, and it's not even for Christians, not an actual thing.
Right.
Like to live my evenings terrified of a thing that wasn't biblical.
Jokes on you, Dan.
Yeah, jokes on me.
that was how it all happened to me.
Yeah.
My older brother became part of an Assembly of God church.
Oh, yeah.
And the pastor's daughter, she was 17, she taught Sunday school. And I was 9, and I wound up in her Sunday school class. And on the first day, she said, "Do you have Jesus in your heart?" I said, "I don't know what that means."
Mm-hmm.
And she said, "Well, you know, you could die at any time. Or Jesus could come back, because he is going to do that. And if either of those things happen before you have Jesus in your heart, you will die and you will go to hell." And I was like, "That is what I do not want."
That's right.
Right.
And so,
she scared the hell out of you, man.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what she did.
So literally. So that's boom. Quick, fast. I was like, "Okay, that's sign me."
Did any of you see the Jesus Man movie unironically?
I've seen several Jesus films.
Where,
just called Jesus.
The one where David A. was
David H. White or something?
A.R. White, the guy who produces all the terrible God's Not Dead movies.
He was a teen star first of Christian media.
I have seen Jesus.
At the end of it, he goes,
like, "Jesus, man!"
Oh yeah,
that one.
I've not seen that on. Ironically, we were required to watch a handful of different Jesus movies growing up. That were definitely not ironic, like much a part of it.
I watched a good bit of Bible Man.
Willie Ames, right?
Yeah, Willie Ames.
I saw Bible Man live in Bangor, Maine, and it was awesome.
Banging.
Live. Yeah,
tell us everything.
Live.
Well, how much time we have?
Yeah.
How much time do you need?
Not a lot.
What is this live?
Lots of smoke, I think.
Was it actually Willie Ames, or was there like a touring Bible Man?
It was a tour.
Okay.
Well, and to...
So with, not the real Ronald McDonald.
Similar to what we do with this show. We don't actually go out on the
road. No. We just have different laugh tracks.
Did it happen in the theater, or did they come to like a church?
It was the Bangor Coliseum in Bangor, Maine.
The Bangor Players.
The Bangor Players.
It was a local troop.
They got Bible Man from Samuel French and put it on themselves.
Now, I think what's interesting is that, like you said, the schism within the continuum, which is completely accurate, because like, there's not even an agreement on Jesus movies. Most Presbyterians would tell you any form of an icon of Jesus is like Jim Caviezel.
Wrong.
No, sir. Absolutely not.
So they're like it's Muhammad or something.
Yeah, like should not look at any form or fat, which is crazy because I grew up Southern Baptist where we would like that was like a it was a pilgrimage. We would watch every year. We watch a Jesus movie of some sort, and then you know, the school that I was a principal of was a Presbyterian based school, and they didn't. You weren't allowed to show
The Gospel Road narrated by Johnny Cash.
No,
it's a favorite of Dave's.
It's a real good one, by the way.
Oh, I mean, it's got Johnny Cash. How could it not be?
June plays Mary Magdalene, right? Or Mary?
Wow. Yeah. No, I think that's a big part of all three of our backgrounds and kind of not just who we are, but like how we approach culture and life is that all of us probably had different levels of background that shaped kind of our response, so to speak. I don't want to speak for you guys any more than.
Well, I think it's interesting that as we've gotten into it, and we've probably in certain ways we've kind of leveled out from some of our backgrounds. I wasn't allowed to watch, you know, Lion King or even like Captain Planet, those kind of things. Like, it just they thought it promoted New Age philosophy right. and the yes. worship of the wow. earth. Circle yeah. of Life, my mom was like, that's evil.
You do still turn to you.
And
Elton
John is singing
seven
it?
What are we doing? Sodomites?
But I think it's interesting that even through that, we found our place within that spectrum, though. You know what I'm saying? Right, and right. we tried to cast a wider net within it without seeing there. And I think you can also come to the other point where you just either wholesale reject it or wholesale. It's easy to become cynical, and I yes. think it's yeah. it's harder to draw that path and say, hey, man, I understand where you're coming from. I understand why you are the way you are and why you believe these kind of, now looking back, kind of fringe things. But at the same time, like, there's a better way. And I think each of us would have come to that conclusion. Like, we found a better way. I can't speak for Brent, yeah. but that's kind of where I've...
No, I am all about sin. And more of it, please. But I do think, going back to Hallmark, because it's what I do, I think that is part of the reason why Hallmark is as big as it is, especially at Christmas time,
mm.
is it is as clean as TV can get nowadays. Yes. And so there is a large part of America that still wants to be able to turn on TV and not worry about it.
Not hear a cuss.
Yeah, and so it's
all
very,
nursing homes.
Yeah. That's a weird bit for me, because I think sometimes I really admire just the complete saccharine brush with which things are painted, to the point where you're just like, man, you can almost kind of get inoculated into this existence where everything's all right. And the other part of me does get angry, because this is portraying something that isn't a basis of reality. This isn't a basis of I mean, we don't get to talk. The reason I'm talking a lot here is because I always talk a lot, but also, like, we don't get to talk about religion or politics on our podcast.
Right.
Like, we don't get to do it. It's right. like, that's very difficult for me, because I'm passionate about those things.
Yeah.
But for me, like, I think, and I kind of lost my train of thought, but...
The Hallmark panacea.
Yeah, with these Hallmark movies, I think, like, I grew up, and I was never taught to hate anyone. Like, I wasn't. I was taught to love everybody, but I was never taught to be an ally. I was never taught to show that how I vote or how my silence speaks volumes.
Right.
Like, I wasn't taught those things. Right. My parents were amazing. They loved me unconditionally. They were wonderful, and I was taught to love everybody. But I had to learn that this passive silence does speak. Like, yeah. it speaks with lack of action. And so for me, like, sometimes I watch the Hallmark movie, and it's like it's analogous to a good cheeseburger, right? Like, mm. everybody loves a good cheeseburger. Some people, their cheeseburgers Hallmark movies, you know, and they just go, and they know it's going to happen. And sometimes I'm like, yeah, all right, good cheeseburger, got
it. It's the cheeseburger in a can that you have to steam open on a camping trip.
Yeah. And then other times I look at it, and I'm like, this is just not living in the real world, and it refuses to like, even...
pretend.
Yeah. yeah. And so that is an interesting part of what we do, I think, for sure.
Yeah. And the fact that it took until 2018 for there to be a black lead in a Hallmark
is
movie.
Absurd.
Yeah, no, that's crazy. Like, the minimal...
And they were surprised that people noticed. Yes. They were like, what? We love diversity.
There's at least one person of color in all of our movies.
Now that we've been shouted at furiously on Twitter, we love diversity.
I know.
not an interracial couple, so we'll see.
Not in the lead, no. Yeah. Freeform is like running wild with
themselves.
So that
I have a question. They know that. Now, when y'all aren't doing this podcast, when y'all aren't having to pay attention to this one particular channel, what do you watch for enjoyment? It whether it's like something like really objectively good, or something such as
the house flipping shows.
Are You the One? Like, when I'm not watching TV for this podcast or watching some movie for the other podcast, I'm on every cooking show and every house renovation show.
So I love Travel Channel, which, I mean, if I just want to kind of check my brain out, I love doing that. But I also love, and this is the weird thing about me, I really love dark kind of gritty shows.
You're a big Forensic yeah. Files guy.
You love Forensic yeah. Files, love that. But I also love, like, shows where there's not going to be a happy ending. Me and my wife are completely opposite sides of the spectrum what we enjoy. I love The Breaking Bads. I love Barry.
I had to talk for 2 months for you to watch Barry.
Barry, I finally watched it. It was gripping. Phenomenal. Just phenomenal. And I really love stuff that actually paints the bleak picture of reality in a
Ooh,
lot of ways.
You should watch Years and Years.
I'm in. I mean, sign me up.
Never heard of it.
HBO show from Russell Davies, who he did the Doctor Who reboot and Queer as Folk.
Okay, okay.
And it's basically about how awful the next 10 to 15 years are going to be.
Wow.
See, I'm in. Sign
it's
me up.
Episode six airs tonight. It already aired in the UK. It's about a family that lives outside of
Manchester
in England, and how they deal with, and it, like I said, six episodes from start to finish, goodbye. It's about how they deal with the disintegration of the world from 2019 to like 2037.
Huh.
And each episode goes faster and faster and faster through the years, and it's about how things break down, and everything in the North Pole melts, and
but we just adjust,
and like all the banks collapse.
It's like the Trump years. Awful things happen, and you just get used to it, and then the next terrible thing
trudged forward through it. It's each week is a new horrifying thing that takes place, and then you watch the family sort of ease into that.
Jeez.
Like, I guess we have to just keep on going after.
But it's riveting,
insane, impossible. But also completely plausible.
What's the name of this?
Years and years. Yeah. Anyway, to go back to the pleasure watch, what do you got?
So I one thing that stands out about me that is not a millennial trait is always I will almost never, with the exception of Arrested Development, watch something a second time. There's so much content. And like even if I purchase a movie, which I like to purchase movies in their best content possible, so like 4K, if it was filmed in organic 4K, I want to watch it there. Yeah. I will only purchase movies I've seen if there's a chance I watch them again, which is rare, or if someone's going to be at my house that I know, like, hey, you want to watch a movie? And I watch it with someone who's not seen it before.
Right, sure.
So I'm always after new content. A lot of it would be considered more prestige kind of television.
Right.
I think The Leftovers, Damon Lindelof's The Leftovers, is great maybe show. My favorite show of all time.
Mm-hmm. Oh. You said about Watchmen?
Yeah, I am. I wasn't huge about the movie, but Zack Snyder's just a hack to me.
The movie wasn't great. Love the comic book.
Yeah.
Read it.
Sure,
read
too.
Lindelof is amazing. It's like Abrams was the Spielberg, let me entertain you guy, and then Carlton Cuse was the let me market guy, and then Lindelof was nutbags. And they were like,
right.
Go ahead, Damon, do whatever you want. And it's amazing. And my wife likes that stuff too. She's not a Hallmark movie person at all. We watch a lot of that kind of television, on HBO or Netflix or what have you. And then if I'm going to watch something that's like what you're talking about, really only one show does it for me where I can't not stick around, and it's Restaurant Impossible with Robert Irvine. And to be honest, I don't know what it is, but I know that it's this, like, I've coached basketball for 15 years, and like tough love can be the worst thing to say or the best thing to say, and it can be used, but like there's so many times where I've running kids sprints and they're crying and parents are coming to me and they're like, you just don't understand my boy, you don't understand blah blah blah, and then the end of the season gets there and there's this great moment where, you know, there's tears and there's a thank you or there's something, and like you feel like, because in that moment I'm a tough love guy, but in that moment it's still hard for me. Like I have twin 3-year-olds and it's hard for me to see them suffer in any way, shape or form, and so there's something about Irvine where that shtick and the editing works for me. Because most of those shows, they're edited in a way that's so dumb. It's like somebody's like, all right, can you look up and go 5 minutes left? Like, you know what I mean? Like, I hate that. But there's something about Irvine's that feels very authentic to me and feels like he's, you know, I don't know what it is. I told Sarah that the other night, my wife, and I like just got sucked in and just started watching one. And that doesn't happen often, but if I happen to catch it on, I will 100% do it, but I spend a lot of time with my wife's not around watching Yankee baseball. I usually watch about every game, so there's that.
Right.
Brandon?
I am kind of the opposite. I only, like, for TV, I rewatch things. I don't watch a lot of new shows. The fact that I watch Stranger Things in one weekend, the week that it comes out, is an anomaly.
Right.
Part of it is, you know, I have like two hours at night where I'm going to lay in bed with my wife and we're going to watch something, and you just want to just kind of turn it off. And so we watch a lot of the same things, like Office, Friends, etc.
Right.
over. But we will watch, and like we'll pick a new show
And by new, I mean like 10 years old. Like right now, we're watching. Right now, we're watching 24.
And so, oh, that's relaxing.
So, yeah. Yeah, I don't know. How about an ep of 24?
There's something about like I don't remember the last time I watched a TV show that was every week. I'm so like let's just watch the next episode just right there. There's something about that that's just strangely relaxing to me, just to be able to not care and the next episode's coming.
Sounds like a marketable thing.
Yeah,
we should look into it.
What if we called it binging?
Binge flicks. What if it's on the internet though? Yeah. Internet binge flicks.
I love it.
Okay,
love
great.
It.
.com.co.
So yeah, but with movies, I don't like rewatching movies. And my wife does. She watches the same movies over and over again, and I'm very much I'll watch it once and. If maybe I'll watch it again, but not a lot.
My wife's the same way.
Except Christmas.
Well, no, Polar Express. Duh.
Yeah, please.
I have
Christmas movies are.
They're designed to be a thing that you go back.
It's weird because I have a lot more leniency with the quality of movies that I watch than TV. I'm not sitting around for bad TV, but bad movies. Yeah, we went to see. What was the movie we saw at the Camelot? We could hardly see.
90 Day Fiancé might change your mind.
Ugh, not even heard of it. I don't even, what's that?
It is what it sounds like.
Forced marriage.
Oh my gosh.
90 Day Fiancé? Crazy.
No, was it Slender? We saw Slender Man. And I walked out. We walked out of the theater. And he and I go about every Thursday night after all the kids are in bed, late night, 10 o'clock,
we go.
It doesn't matter what's playing. We pick something, we
That's
go.
That's true.
Which in Greenville, South Carolina is a lot different than it is in Los Angeles.
Right.
Like, we went. Slender Man was one of the worst movies I've ever seen. Uh-huh. Ever seen.
It was next level. Bad.
And I still was like, glad I went to the movies. Glad I got a large Diet Coke. glad I did it. You know what I mean?
Fixing to get into August. Yeah. And August is when all the worst of things
The dumping
open.
Ground.
And
That's
I
right.
love going, like, on an afternoon and getting some mozzarella sticks and a grape soda and watching anything.
Let's go. That's right.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I interrupted you.
No, I almost never watch movies at home. Like, the only... I go to the theater, I watch it, and then I watch 10-year-old television.
Yeah. Well, and then you'll hit a little diamond in the rough like Crawl, which was
fun. So much fun.
Barry Pepper, where you been, man?
Studio dropped the ball on that one.
It was great.
They didn't pre-screen it for
That's
us.
That's dumb.
I'm still mad at it.
We had such a blast that movie.
It was a...
Right. Yeah, we went Thursday night and had a great time.
Yeah.
We normally get to see everything early and free, mm-hmm. and we have bought tickets to Crawl because they weren't showing it to film critics.
That's unbelievable.
Wow. Yeah. Weird.
Mm-hmm. Oh, didn't know what they had. Well, all right, you guys.
They just thought, like, you know, it's a killer alligator movie. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, we'll but it, come on. It's from the director of Piranha 3D.
Like,
and it's in July. This is when we want to see these things.
Exactly.
Hey, can you settle an argument between Brandon and I?
Happily.
Is September... A movie that comes out September 8th.
September 15th.
Is a movie that comes out September... We had this argument last night. We're staying at the same Airbnb.
All right.
Is a movie that comes out September 8th, can it possibly be considered one of the big summer releases?
Oh, no.
No. Here's what happens.
After Labor Day...
Thank you so much.
I understand what you're saying.
These people are real
when
film
I
critics.
Think back to... So we were talking about...
He looks at me and he goes, It Too, that's got to be one of the biggest summer blockbusters.
We host the Hallmark. We are just as big of... critics of that. I think back to
yes.
a couple years ago, I think of it as a summer movie. It was the movie of the summer for me.
But I was teaching school.
It came out September 8th.
I had eight class.
I tried to explain this.
I understand the thought process and maybe even the way that it actually is.
I will say this. We all, and even you guys, I grew up in an era in which the term summer movie meant something.
That's right.
Because like there was a certain kind of movie that would happen between Memorial Day
until
and Labor
school.
Day
That's
that
right.
did not happen the rest of the year.
Right.
Now every other week is a summer
That's
movie
right.
because
That's
it's the superheroes and the world blowing up and killer alligators and killer clowns and whatever else.
I just remember
they're all summer movies.
It was hot and it was awesome. It is a summer movie.
Oh my goodness.
Brandon's not wrong.
Indeed.
Necessarily because of the way releases are happening now. Because it used to be, and we talk about this all the time on LK, January and February, dumping ground.
Mm-hmm. And wide release of awards movies that opened on three
That's
screens
right.
in December.
Yeah, right.
August and September, dumping ground. But the studios figured that out and realized, what if we released something good during the dumping ground
right.
season?
Yeah.
During those months where nothing good comes
300
out.
300 was like March 3rd, and that was like a movie that everybody's like, wait a minute.
Yeah. So now you've got like Black Panther in February and right. It in September. Yeah. And it's like, and there is no dead time necessarily.
It technically not a summer movie, but it really was.
Yeah.
It was just...
They held the release.
A week late.
It was, it was riding on the fumes.
That's right.
And they were smart to put it out in September, and that's why they're smart to put out the new one.
It's going
to
go like gangbusters.
All I'm saying is, some states, September's the hottest month of the year.
Here.
This city. It didn't get hot here till last week, which means that summer is going to last until Thanksgiving.
The problem is with us, and we do have more of a winter than you guys, but it gets so, like... I got off the plane yesterday, and 84 degrees here. I know
it's
that everybody.
Not the same.
No, it's 84 in South Carolina.
84 in South Carolina is you feel like you're.
Yeah, I'm drinking the air.
Sweat box. It's the the September in Los Angeles is when everything catches fire.
Yeah,
and you have to think about. Will we need to evacuate?
Well, like you said, it was hot, and you went to the that's like hot. 7-8 months a year in South Carolina.
That's true. Yeah, it's a summer movie.
Okay,
it's a humidity movie.
It's
for
an
sure.
April. It's an April 20th summer movie.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah, for sure.
Oh, God, this has been a treat. I have been a fan of you guys since episode one. Like I am trying to remember how I even heard that the show was going to happen, but I saw a tweet about it. I listened to the first episode. I was like, I'm in. And so y'all have just made this thing run I have never seen a show made by people outside of like the media bubble take off so fast. You know, you've been on GMA three times now. You guys are like you were in Southern Living and O and all this stuff. I'm like endlessly impressed with that. And the show remains just really funny, and y'all are lovely people to spend.
You have enabled my husband.
Also, it's all your fault.
In a way that makes me resent you all.
Thanks.
I'm honored to be resented.
I think you liked a tweet early on.
Mm. Yeah.
And I went to your Twitter and... Do you still have something about Hallmark in your bio?
No, just about my Christmas movie book.
Okay. Yeah. There was something where I knew when I went to your page that this guy watches... Hallmark movies, and then I told Dan, this film critic,
and I to be fair, we're just excited to be here. I couldn't be an indie film nerd in South Carolina, but I became a film critic nerd in South Carolina. So like, I would be like, initially like, I would just look. There were about five or six critics that I would just look for. Rotten Tomatoes is useless to me because it's just this or this, and I don't like 89%. They all gave it a 6 of 10. I don't, but I would start to know names and start to read reviews. So like when I knew your name, like before when he mentioned it to me, and that was like the first sign that I was like, somebody who does something in this industry is listening to us, which was like mind blowing to me, which was so cool. So we're excited to be here. And also I think when you said outside of like, we're still an indie podcast, so to speak, the only time I've gotten in a legitimate like Twitter fight with somebody ever, we were on Esquire's top 20 podcasts of 2018, and they put it out, and you said, hey, Dax Shepard's podcast was on there.
So it was the list was, I think we were the very first ones on the list, and then it was Armchair Expert with Dax, and so I tweeted out, so great to be list buddies with Dax Shepard.
And the problem is, on their write up about Dax, they called him a narcissist. And which
is their defense.
To be fair, so Dax comments on our tweet and says, "Oh well, they don't really like me that much." And all of his fans went nuts; they went crazy. But somewhere
because it's armchair.
Armchair expert. So is the name of the podcast. So they're the armchairs. Yeah, and they have like an arm muscle and then cherry. It's terrible. So somewhere in that,
we are still nicknamed.
So somewhere in that thread, somebody goes, "I wish they'd show some love to people who are actually making content somewhere in their house or in their basement and doing this the right way." These are just podcasts that are mass success.
And it was a lot of Dax, and it was a lot of like
celebrities.
And we were the only ones that weren't on that. And I just kind of clapped back a little bit. I just kind of was like, "Hey, bro, like that's what we are." And he goes, "Yeah, Hallmark's in your name." And I said, "Dude, we live in South Carolina, and we're in somebody's living room doing this on old Hallmark doesn't pay us. this is as indie as it gets. Like, right.
And then he said, but you were on Good Morning America.
And we said, He finally came back and said, you know what? I did some research. You guys are legit. Really sorry.
Did he really finally apologize?
First time ever on the internet, I think.
You are genuinely nobody.
Yeah. Yeah. And he just was like,
who are you?
Best of luck to you. You fooled me.
Doing the one thing you want us to do, but we're just doing it too good.
That's right. Yeah, yeah. And some would say we're doing it too well, but it doesn't really matter.
Well, and that's why we're not doing it better.
Well, as Bran would say, how can people find you on the socials?
We are we took the handle at Hallmark Podcast.
Brilliant.
Because Hallmark's behind technologically a solid 15 years.
Yeah, watch their movies. They don't know what apps are.
And you can find us at deckthehallmark.com or hallmarkchannelpodcast.com or hallmarkpodcast.com.
Yeah. We have all
we
those domains.
We bought a lot of domains.
Yep. Nice.
Yep. It was a gold rush out there.
One day.
We were just like, Hallmark!
We actually pitched in our own money from our checking accounts to buy those domains.
Wow.
Now, this episode is going to drop on July 29th, so if you are in Los Angeles,
yes. Ooh. Yeah.
July 30th, you need to swing by the Dynasty Typewriter, yes, and see these cats and me.
That's right.
Do a live episode of Back to Hallmark.
I'm so happy you're joining us for the episode.
Oh, it's going to be amazing.
If you hadn't asked me, I would have strangled you all. So.
But
I can't
also,
wait.
If you are a Hallmark Channel fan, Andrew Walker of Blue Shirts and Stuff.
Yes.
He's gonna,
King of the Henleys.
He's going to be joining us for the Q&A portion. Just because, why not?
He's okay.
He's got nothing else to do.
He's legit famous here, so yes. that is super exciting. Now, are tickets still online, or is it all
walk-in? They're online, I believe.
You can go to our website.
Deckthehallmark.com.
How much are the tickets?
$15. $20 at the door.
$20
to AM. I ain't paying that.
Oh, you're my plus one. You relax. And there will be Kringles. Yes? No? Are there Kringles?
There's a coupon for it.
Yeah. Okay, fine. Well, there's Kringles.
You know what's sad is that she emailed us and said we could mail in actual Kringles to the event center.
We could 3D print.
And the problem is, I just like I didn't know how many people were coming to the show, and I just couldn't bring myself to. Hello, Dynasty Typewriter. For our 40 guests, could you intake some Kringles and put them in your freezer, get them out an hour ahead of time?
Because that's the best way to do it. Actually, right when we start the show,
what color spatulas do you have? Because it's important.
Is anything other than red and green?
Your rider is very specific about it.
Well, what's funny? This
our rider, we're trying to end the episode, but our rider is just Diet Coke.
We never wrote up a rider.
No.
But somehow the Raleigh Improv got a rider, which was correct. Diet Coke.
Diet Coke,
that's all we want.
That's all we care about.
So somehow they got it. So I'm very happy about it.
Anyway, so come to Dynasty Typewriter if you can. And if not, go listen to Deck the Hallmark. These guys are hilarious. Even if you loathe these films the way my husband does, you will enjoy their show.
Right. Also, we should say
yes
that if you are listening to this for the very first time because you have followed these three
over here,
We are Linoleum Knife.
Yes,
we are a podcast of the cinema.
Mm-hmm.
This is LKTV, which is our Patreon only podcast.
One of three Patreon only podcasts that you can find.
Them, you can go to patreon.com/linoleumknife.
Yes.
To find Alonzo Duralde on the internet, you can do what?
I'm at A Duralde, A-D-U-R-A-L-D-E on Twitter, and Dave is D. Leland White.
That's my middle name.
On Twitter.
Leland.
And you can follow the show at LinoleumCast on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook.
And to be fair, if you're like me, if you've experienced this, I don't live in a big city, and I have this combination of I want this art house stuff, but I also want the big picture, you know, big movie, summer movies.
Then Hallmark Channel's for you.
No, Hallmark Channel should be for no one, but Linoleum Knife Podcast is for you because they cover both and they do it so well. It's insightful. It's funny. I would highly recommend you go check it out.
Thank you very much.
Bless your heart,
absolutely.
Sir.
All right. This has been a stone cold gas. Welcome to LA. Mm. I'm glad we did this. Until next time, goodbye.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Oh, and Merry Christmas. Lest we forget.